Yeah, I do.
So we were talking about the curation that Matthew Higgs did, City Racing.
Yeah, the show City Racing, a history show at the ICA. I think it was called something like City Racing 1988 to 1998. Quite a long title. It was sort of a survey show, supposedly.
So, did you work on that curation?
No, not really at all. We did suggest some people who he hadn't put in, who he hadn't selected, that we thought would, if they weren't in the show, would be a misrepresentation, too much of one. I mean, you couldn't do a representation anyway because things were installed in City Racing. It's a specific place, and you couldn't do Lucy Gunning exhibition because she put doors on rooms and made work, and particularly to do with the room itself and some of the atmosphere of the place, and so he couldn't do it. But we made some people like John Pettinuzzo, who used to live in Philibert Road, had a show at City Racing, and we made sure he got in the show.
I'm just having a bit of problem with the level here,
Right.
Matthew, so can you just keep talking for
Yeah, I can
now?
keep talking if you want me to keep
All right,
talking.
okay, that's fine now. So, you said before as well that you seem to, like all the shows that you did yourself, like
Yeah.
because there were those exchange shows and
But
everything,
some of them
seemed
were,
to be artist-led.
yeah. Yeah, we did do exchange shows with other artists-run spaces, and it was there were kind of swaps in a sense, but not literally always. But there were definitely links made, and then the people we'd meet there would show or select a show of their own artist at our gallery later. So Transmission Gallery selected who showed at our gallery when they had their swap time down with us in London, and we went up to Glasgow and we chose to show ourselves, us five who ran the gallery, as it happened. But we didn't always do that. In Bremen, we didn't do that. We showed other people like Liz Wright and as well.
And you said also that you somehow preferred artist curations as opposed to galleries, because you mentioned interim. Can you remember?
Well, we didn't really curate shows. That's one of the, I can't remember if you just said that, but we didn't really curate anything really. We never thought of ourselves as curating, and primarily we were just showing quite openly, really, friends or people we met through the gallery or knew before, who got to know the gallery and us better, and then it seemed appropriate to show them. And we weren't always selecting work. We were selecting people for various reasons, some of which we could say are incestuous reasons, some were completely because there were other connections that, made good links with for us, which one of which was this idea of doing the show, say, with an artist run space in Bremen. We did a show there with a gallery called Gruppe Grün. And the guy came to us first and introduced himself. And then we went over there on a visit. I think it was a Reese. I think Pete and I went, and we got paid a grant to go out and research Berlin, and Bremen was another place we went to see as well on that tour. And then we came back and then organised the show out there. I don't, in actual fact, we never did a swap back with them, funnily enough. That didn't happen, that one. For whatever reason, just I don't think we actually hit it off artistically. But we had a good time. They were lovely people, the ones we met.
Did you, I mean, you seem to be showing, like, in a way, artist-led projects rather than, say, going to galleries, and I just
What do
wondered
you
if
mean?
that was
What
a
do I, you'd have to
shift.
explain that. What do you mean by that a bit more?
Well, sort of like, I don't know, I suppose because I'm just thinking really, at that time there was a sort of change in mood, in that there was a time where artists were like putting their own shows up, like probably more so. And then artist might get invited by a gallery to select work to go into that gallery, and then more and more so it was curators selecting the artist's work, and then
right,
and then it kind of seemed to turn on its head, where you had artist straight curators, or whatever you want to call it, for that, for a certain period of time.
When you, when are you thinking of that latter thing happening?
I suppose like the latter bit in the sort of 90s more.
Yeah, which is our period of City Racing. I don't know. See, during, I mean, there were a number of other artists run exhibitions in, and some of them in, you know, repeatedly in the same space. So there were kind of galleries, if you want to call them galleries, like Infanta of Castile was one in West London, as far as I remember. I mean, but they were, this was in the 90s, and they were just artists organising their own shows. And there's one called Modern Art, run by Liz Wright and Giorgio Sodotti. I mean, and that wasn't, you know, a gallery in the commercial sense. It was a place they ran where they put on exhibitions. And if, I mean, if they happened to sell something, they would do. But they weren't curating either, really. I don't think they'd think they were. They were sort of, I think it was just making opportunities for people to exhibit work that they liked or that they thought might be interesting, or, you know, that would be done in the way it wanted to be done, rather than, you know, I don't know, not happening because it wasn't commercial, is probably the kind of thinking behind quite a lot of the work. I don't know, just...
Going back to sort of late in that, did you have any involvement in the public inquiries?
With the road, over the road scheme? Yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean, we used to go to, I used to go to lots of them. I can't remember all the details of it, though, but I used to thrash my way from work and try and get, or go there before work, or whenever they were there, or go there on long lunches and go back again and listen to what was happening and stuff. I didn't have, I think I was working, so for me it was harder to go to them because they were during the day, during working hours, so I would be working and go, so I could only really go on days when I wasn't working at Art Scribe magazine or Art Monthly, so I wasn't there a lot. I went on various protests that happened on, you know, some days as well.
With the public inquiries, do you know what year they were?
Well, I mean, 90, the road was, didn't I think 94, 93-ish kind of period, weren't they? I'm not 100% sure. I mean, basically they were, but they were early in a way, because they were before the Dongas Tribe protests and the in Claremont Road and stuff, which, and that was in, I don't remember all this properly. That was in 94, 93, wasn't it? So no, they must have been in, they were in probably, you know, 90 or 92 or 1, I think. But I have to say, I'm really not quite sure, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But we can find that out, I'm sure.
So, you know, when you went to the public inquiries, were they quite well attended? Or did it depend?
It varied. They were pretty well attended, though, but a lot by artists and people, from my memory, and a number of people who came into the area when they started. I mean, a number of people who were kind of politically interested came and lived in the area when they started and started turning up in the pub or coming along to the inquiries, and you'd meet them and then you go to the pub afterwards. And, you know, I think I must have gone to the inquiries quite late, quite often, and then we went to the pub afterwards. So I remember quite often being in this pub in Stratford with a lot of people who'd been in it and discussing all about the details and, you know, stuff like that. And they would be people who were not artists, some of them.
So there were some public inquiries, weren't there, that held in Stratford?
They were all held in Stratford, in the building, I don't know what it's called. It's opposite the shopping centre on the...
Town Hall?
I think it's the old Town Hall. Or, yeah, I don't know if it may be the Town Hall now still. And that's where they were.
Can you remember their names and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, people particularly, but I mean, Pete Owen and Paul Noble used to come, who I knew very well, and they've been doing City Racing as well. But Yeah, well, I'd often list them all off. I mean, there were loads of people, really, but there were absent names as well. I mean, there were people I don't. I mean, Shea Whittaker obviously went.
Yeah.
God, this is, I find this listing of names really hard.
Yeah. Was it like John Smith?
No, you see, I don't remember people like John Smith going. Ian Bourne went, definitely. The filmmaker, he went and was very involved. And I mean, there was other people like Lucy Bagley went. She was an actor, and she lived with Ian at the time when I first met her. So she used to go. Not whether you call her an artist or not, but she was definitely there. Sally Barker a lot. John Petanuzzo, he went. But there, I mean, I can't remember them all. There were lots, but there were also quite a lot of people who weren't artists who went as well, and they all get a bit mixed up because they're, you know, that was quite what was quite interesting was it did involve a lot of mixture of people. It was when actually the community started coming out of its separate kind of artists groups and old people who lived there for years groups, and you know, and then you, because you get some of these people all coming together. We used to have regular meetings. I mean, we used to meet in the evening locally in a hall. I think it was the church hall just off Grove Green Road. And there'd be all kinds of different people in there, but quite regularly there'd be me and Paul and Pete and Sheila and various other people, Stephen Ward and these guys who came in out of nowhere who seemed to be involved but and very useful. They were too, but not artists. Can't remember the names though. Colin, somebody other. I've forgotten his second name now. He was a very political man.
And you know, like sort of the long-term residents. Are there any people that really stood out? You remember?
Well, yeah. Edie Edworthy, isn't that somebody? Edie Edworthy. She was an old lady who used to come along. And there were. No, see, names are terrible. There was a couple of women who had children who used to come who lived in your road. Was that? Colville, lived in Colville Road, used to come sometimes. But I can't remember their names though. Sheila and somebody else. And somebody else, they came.
That woman with the blonde
hair. Yeah, they lived always like either together or next to each other. And they, I think they were single parent mums, I'm not sure. But I think they used to come. But I could always list more people who I know as artists who didn't come. Which sounds silly, but that, yeah. I can almost do it in the other way around, which yeah. is, I don't know why that is, but I can, you know, I know Jeff Dennis never did, and Connie Parker never did, and all these, you know, people like that didn't, to my knowledge. But I mean, they may have gone sometimes, and I wasn't there when they did. But there was a kind of core of people who tried to organise the protests and things that we used to do in the up and down the road occasionally, and that core group would meet and then, you know, just rally people round a bit. So you'd get people who come to do a little protest, but they wouldn't have organised it. You know, we would have probably organised it.
So what sort of things did you organise?
Well, I don't know. I didn't do, but there was a protest outside the town hall where they all wore white overalls and gas masks and stuff. And I've seen pictures of that, but I wasn't able to go because I had to work. I just prioritised to work instead. Needed the money.
Was that around 1990 when that?
I think probably, yeah, it would have been. Well, it was doing the inquiries, and so, yeah, whenever they were, which I think was the early 90s.
Mm.
Yeah. But there were others. There were when a house was being demolished, this is creeping back into my mind, when there were houses being demolished or about to be demolished, it was, we would find out somehow. This was the problem. You had to react quickly sometimes, and so there was like a network of people who would be on the phone and ring up each other and say, there's something going on now my way. And so if people who lived in the area were on the phone, they could ring them up and say, look, come down. And then there'd be a spontaneous attempt, you know, to get in the way or stand outside at least. I mean, I remember Julia, who's my neighbour now still in Grove Green Road, being hauled off by the police, I think, because she decided to, you know, make a big reaction in front of the gates. And I think we all found it quite embarrassing or something, probably, but it was probably quite effective, really. But we were all gathering outside. So I think it was in Philibert Road, but I can't remember where it was now. But there was something being knocked down, probably.
Is it the post office?
Yes, it might have been the old post office. Yes, well done. Yeah, it was the old post office. It was, and there was an old post office in Philibert Road. I mean, it's been so long gone, I forgot all about it. We were outside that, I think. Mm. And I, you know, we didn't succeed in getting it kept, but we made a lot of noise.
So you know the post office one, that happened early in the morning, didn't it?
Or I really can't remember. No, that would, I mean, I don't know. I don't remember.
Do you
remember going to it? As little as possible. I mean, I really don't remember much. I remember standing outside with a lot of people, probably with banners and things. I don't remember whether we were trying to stop a vehicle get in or whether we were. But we didn't go in, as far as I remember, and climb all over it. But we might have done. I just don't remember. I'm sorry. My memory is terrible.
Memory is so strange.
Yeah. Well, there's so much gone under the bridge, you know. I can't remember it all.
I can't remember if we mentioned it before, but the festival in 1990, where there was...
I mean, the street party sort of thing, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I remember we made lots of food to try and sell them. It was a fundraiser partly, I think, probably. And it was just for... it wasn't really to get loads of publicity. I think it was to raise money, and I think it was probably a morale boosting thing as well. There was a benefit in the Northcote pub, which I remember quite well. That's when I fell in love with Lucy Bagley. It was when she's on stage being Wendy, which is her alter ego character, and she was very funny and got all the crowd laughing and was very great. It was a very assertive. I thought she's great. So that was another fundraiser, and we got permission of the publican to do the event, you know, with a stage and everything, you know, not a high one, but, you know, and the pub was absolutely packed and it was great. So I remember that fundraiser. So, and they were, I don't know what the money would be for, but probably things like t-shirts and leaflets and, you know, that kind of stuff was where all the money went. There was never much anyway. I remember going down to the Department of Transport or Department of Environment, as it probably was down in Westminster one day, and all being in boxes outside and trying to struct the doors and giving out stuff as people walked in and out, you know, and trying to lay a petition upstairs, you know, in front of somebody. I also remember one very funny thing, and I think it's very funny anyway, is we went to the house of ministry's civil servants in Hampstead. We went to his house one Sunday morning.
McGregor?
No, he was called Yass. And we all went up there with people like Colin Bex, that was his name, that guy I mentioned called Colin Bex, and various people. I can't remember exactly who was there. I think probably people like John Ellis, who was in the Stranglers, the band The Stranglers, and was probably there. He was big John Ellis could definitely get a mention because he was big on the protesting stuff. He used to live in Your Road, in Colville.
Was he in the
Anatomy House? No, I don't think they were, actually. Because they weren't artists in the fine artists, you know, kind of visual artist thing. He was an artist, but he played guitar. And
But Steve Rushton told me that Acme also housed musicians.
Well, maybe he was. Well, if he did, I didn't know that. If he was, I didn't know that, or I've forgotten it. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay.
I'm desperately trying to rake my brain for his partner's name, who is still with. I've gone and forgotten it. I know her really well. I can't remember what it is. But anyway, we went to this house in Hampstead, and we knocked on the door, and the idea was to try and get hold of the civil servant who was really behind the fact that it was all going ahead, because they're all powerful, and we thought, and they designed it, really. Well, it was actually designed by Edward Lutyens at the road scheme it's part of years ago. But we knocked on the door, and I discovered later, I think maybe at the time, but this is where my memory goes, that it was actually Catherine Yass's dad. And Catherine Yass is a quite famous artist, who I also knew at the time as well, who didn't live anywhere near us, and she was a photographer from Goldsmiths I knew from you know, and suddenly this name Yass clicked. I thought, my God, it's her dad. And it was. And it was a lovely house on a hill, Really nice wooden sort of 60s-y eco kind of house, funnily enough. And he was the man that we thought was causing this road to be built through loads of artists in East London. And that was most amusing. And I told her about it, actually, later on.
Say?
She was a little... I remember... My memory is she was a bit embarrassed, is my memory of it.
Because, you see, Catherine would love to have been with the protesters making a little piece of artwork, because I
maybe
remember at the slide,
right,
she did some really funny things with images of policemen,
right,
tying jade cloths,
right,
on photographs of images of policemen.
Mm. Well, she didn't say anything like, oh, well done, that'll teach my dad, or anything like that. I can't vaguely remember that she was there, but I can't. That's probably not the case, actually. She probably wasn't, because I remember we opened the door, there were people in the house, but with this guy, but I don't remember who they were, and I may not have seen them properly anyway at the time, but she could have been there, you know, people stay with their dads at home Sunday morning.
Is that the house where Paul Noble rolled out his sheet with little cards on and knocked on the door?
Quite possibly. Yeah, there was a definite sort of planned, when they open the door, we will do this kind of thing. But I can't remember what it was. So maybe I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just remember going there and it being quite a palaver, and us all being quite amused that we actually got an art team to open the door. We sort of thought we'd caught you out, kind of thing, you know, because couldn't get hold of him any other way, really. But somebody somehow found out where he lived. Yeah.
People
were there
with you.
I don't remember loads. I should think probably 10 or something, I guess.
Was it a group of artists or
no? It was definitely mixed.
Yeah,
absolutely mixed. You know, some of these people, like Colin Ward or Colin Bex, it could have been them, and I'm sure Paul was probably there. You know, it's one of those things you sort of plan to do and go on a Sunday morning. You know, kind of go for a walk on the heath and call in on a protest outside someone's house at the same time.
Demolished.
Yeah.
Can you remember what that street looked like when they start demolishing those houses? Because was it like Philibrook Road was demolished first, or was it all happening around the same time when they started putting those?
I remember things happening in batches, in slots. So you'd be a slot of a road. Some houses in a road would be done. And basically, as far as I understood it, that, you know, once somebody decided to leave a house, and they'd been asked to demolish everything, as soon as a house became free, the race was, could we get it squatted when they'd left? So supposing a legitimate Acme tenant or a legitimate person had sold up their house or decided to go, because they might, you know, the idea was to find out that they had gone, and that was the networking thing as well, really, was, you know, as soon as they'd gone, you had to know about it and get someone in there quick and squat it, which we weren't necessarily all doing, but I was aware of that going on, and I wasn't going to leave my house to go and do it, but in a way it just had to be anybody who said it was theirs. You didn't even have to live in it, really. But so I think they were knocked down in batches, or individually sometimes if possible, but you couldn't knock a house down if it was in a terrace, so you know, they had to get quite a few empty, really, before they could do it. But they would board them up and wreck them and stuff, you know, so they became quickly uninhabitable, they thought, although obviously some people could live in anything, and they did, which I think probably some of the houses in Claremont were pretty rough when they moved in, but they seemed to fix them up enough. A bit like when I was saying, when I moved into my house, the fireplaces had gone and there was a hole in the wall, you know, the toilet smashed kind of idea.
Like, you know, was there a point where you thought that things really started to change?
Well, it would have been after the public inquiry, really, because as soon as that was lost, as it were, as we saw it, then they were free to move with the construction. And to do that, they had to demolish things. So immediately that demolition process began and eviction notices were given. But it didn't happen bang quick, I don't think. I think there was a bit of time after the inquiry, because obviously they had to write to people and,
yeah,
you know, Acme had to notify us and give us dates and, you know, people got them at different times. And I remember there being a time when some people got offered to buy their house because it was decided when it actually came to the crunch, they'd overbought that. The Department of Environment or Transport, whatever they were called, had overbought houses outside of the line of the road. So those people who had those houses by luck were offered them to buy. So not everyone actually had to move out. Some people actually gained a house.
Right.
I mean, some people got them very cheaply. £19,000 for a 3-bedroomed house, you know.
Mm.
Which later they sold and moved to somewhere nice in Wanstead or somewhere. I remember their names now. What's their name? Who's that painter guy? I don't think you know him.
In Grave Green
Road? Yeah, he lived opposite the Northcote.
I know.
Just down from the Northcote, there were a couple. She works at the V&A. They now live in Wanstead somewhere. Very nice people, good friends of Pete and I's and Sharon Days. We used to go there. I've forgotten his name.
Mm.
Terrible. There's some people I don't see much anymore, and that's one of them. His name might come back. Stuart.
That's right, yeah.
Stuart Reed. And I've forgotten his partner's name now. But anyway, so they got their house because they were lucky. And Pete Owen, actually, funnily enough, which is weird, I never quite understood this, he was offered his house, but he didn't take it. He just moved out of it anyway, which I don't really know why he did that, but it would have meant raising money to buy it. Not the first house. He moved out of his... I don't know, why did he have to move? For some reason, Pete moved from one of his Acme houses to another one. Presumably, then they were going to knock it down, so he took the choice of moving to another house. And that second house, he really was lucky, actually, but he didn't take advantage of it. It was one that wasn't on the route. I've forgotten why he didn't do it now. I think they were buying a house, Sheila and he, anyway, round the back. And for some, it was a night, I don't know, that was all sort of going on, and I don't know why they did that.
Mm.
I remember thinking they should have bought it as well, and then they'd have had another house, they could have. But not being a capitalist swine, Pete wasn't worried about making lots of money out of houses, which is now a very unusual idea, but.
What was it like, you know, where you was living on Grave Green Road? Was you there when they started knocking down?
Yeah, I mean, it was. I remember there being lots of dust and, you know, it was pretty horrible. You know, you'd have to walk past all this, you know, even if you tried to stop it, usually you fail, and so they managed to knock it down anyway because, you know, they'd bring in loads of police and you couldn't really beat them at it, and they'd just be there. So you'd walk past, you know, suddenly there'd be a big hole. Yeah, I remember walking along Grove Green Road to go to the station and stuff, and Dyers Hall Road particularly, I think, you know, and there was a whole road just gone suddenly. And then at some point, I can't remember when, you know, people like Pete's house went, you know, where I'd been going for quite a long time. And I suppose it was sad in a way, but I didn't get emotionally really involved in it. If my memory was, because it wasn't like I'd lived there since I was a boy, you know, or something. It was, and we knew why we were there, and we'd played the game of delaying it because it was beneficial to us for studios as much as anything else, but we didn't really think we'd necessarily win. And so I wasn't very upset about it. I was just sorry to see the community kind of artists see that begin to go, because obviously that was bound to happen, and that was a shame.
So, like, did you notice, was there any point where you sort of thought, oh, there's quite a few artists gone now?
I think that really hit me hard, particularly when everything was over, really, and the road was built, pretty much, or when they'd really got everything they needed to build a road. And then there was an enormous lack of people that you knew. So when you walked down the street, you just never saw anyone you knew because they'd all gone.
And
the pub would be empty. 94. Well, it would have been 94. I'm not sure exactly, but probably 94, 5... Or even as late as 6, it probably took, you know, I don't know how long it took to actually really, because obviously people, I can't remember if they built the road in bits, and so some bits were kind of built, and then houses remained, and then they built that bit. I can't remember how it went, but, you know, so there was a kind of delaying. It wasn't sudden, it was a drip thing, I think, probably. And some people did remain. I mean, some people, you know, Ian Bourne still lives there. Pete and Sheila still live in the area. Sally Barker, and, you know, they don't live far away. Some people, John Ellis and call on her name. Sorry, they don't. There are people still around, but they are still a bit more dispersed. So they never went away completely. And then I moved away in the end, anyway. So pretty much.
Like, when did you get the flat in Grove Green Road?
Well, no, Deborah Thomas lived in a house she'd bought in the '80s with her. She's an artist, and she lived with a guy who'd been an artist, Steve. And they, I don't know where they were before, but they bought this flat, and it was not on the line of the road. It was a flat. It was perfectly normal house buying event. You know, ended up with negative equity and stuff. And they split up, and I met Deb. And when my house was, I was still living in my house, but we started going out. And then my house got knocked down, and I just moved into a studio down in Carpenter's Row with Atme, and then to work, and then moved in with Deb in that flat. And I think that was around 94.
Okay.
But it could have been 95. I'm not sure. We met in 94, I know, or before 94. So it's around that time.
You got a letter to say that your house, you had to go.
Yeah. And I didn't, I did it. I think I did what I was asked.
Mm.
I didn't actually, you know, decide to squat it or something. Or I just had so much going on outside of the area that was important to me that I couldn't, the idea of squatting and being somewhere. And, you know, it was a lifestyle I had done before I even lived in Leytonstone years ago. We used to squat and, you know, we didn't have jobs and stuff, and we'd sign on and be artists, and we'd be around the house all the time. Well, you can do that in a squat, but you can't do it on your own, even if you are unemployed, because if you go out, they can just break in, and then so you need someone there all the time, so you need a group of people, and I just couldn't do it. So, and I didn't think of doing it, and I just decided I would give it up. I can't remember the date exactly. I mean, it was quite, I was quite late on, if I remember rightly, but not just by luck. I mean, it wasn't,
so that maybe
94. Well, I think 94. Yeah. I think the thing is, it's quite complicated for me because a lot was going on at the time. My mother died in 94 as well. And so I have this sort of whole, I split up with Lucy Bagley. My mother died. I met Deb before my mother died. And then the house went. And this whole thing's a bit of a blur. And the most important date for me then is 94, because that's when my mum died. And I can't actually remember too much about, I don't mean to sound sentimental about it, but it literally is that's the most important. It's what's clouded out some of the detail about when I moved out and why I moved out when. Because I probably wasn't prioritising that so much. I was running City Racing Gallery, and I was going out with Deb and my mum, you know, so it's all kind of, so exactly when it was, I don't know, but I know my mum died in 94, and I think I moved in with Deb not long after that.
So did you see your house being demolished?
I don't think I did, actually. I don't think I was there when they did it. I remember seeing an amazing, I remember being amazed that it wasn't there anymore, and being like thinking, is that where it was? And at first thinking they haven't done it or something, but I don't think I stood outside and watched it being knocked down. No. And I wasn't sentimental about it anyway, actually, to be honest with you. Once I decided I was going out, I was, you know, I wasn't there anymore, and I'd already got the studio down the road probably or something, and I was busy doing whatever.
So were there quite a lot of houses down Grave Green Road that got knocked down?
Yeah. I mean, from where I live, where the flat that we've still got on the corner of Dyers Hall Road and Grove Green Road, 323, is there's about 10 houses maximum, and then they knocked a whole load down from there, including right down to where my one was 241, and past that, I think all in one go. But not the whole length of the road. One go, I don't think, but I'm not sure.
And look, I remember you saying that time you went to the Northcote pub and they cordoned off the street.
Yeah. Well, Pete Owen used to live in this second house he had. He lived opposite the Northcote, and I remember coming out of the pub, and he couldn't get in his house because his house backed onto Claremont, which was where all the Dongas tribe people were really protesting. It was the height of their protest, when there were cranes, you know, trying to lift them off the roofs and all sorts of stuff. We were still living there. I was in the flat with Deb, and Pete was in his house there, and he couldn't get through the barrier. He had to go up to the barrier and say, "Excuse me, can I get in my house?" And I had to watch him be escorted to his own front door through the barriers that the police had put down the middle of the Grove Road, you know. But that was quite late on when they were really piling the pressure on them, and I think they were trying to keep people away from what was going on, not let any more protests get through and all that sort of thing. So that, I remember that. Can't remember what your question was, though. Did that answer it? It did. Yeah.
Did you ever get mixed up with protesters and things?
I was a protester before, but no, I didn't get mixed up with any of the protesting which they were doing in Claremont Road or up in Wanstead Flats particularly. I just didn't. So no, nothing I remember, you know, any danger occurred to us. Or, you know, I wasn't like, you know, there wasn't like brawl fighting going on or something horrible happening in the street that I had to avoid, as far as I remember. I mean, the thing about Claremont Road was it was a dead end. It was a cul-de-sac effectively. Well, it wasn't, no, because it had two ends, didn't it? But both ends of it went onto Groveling Road. So they could kind of like close off each end and then they were trapped because they only had the tube line next to them and they had nowhere else to go. So basically you didn't have to walk through it and the police could be at each end and you could just walk up Grover Road and it was like a U off the road. You didn't have to go through it, so you wouldn't see. And it was all behind the houses, behind Pete's house, you know, there was a row of houses in front of it. So it was pretty invisible really. You saw most of it when you went down on the tube. That's when you saw the when you were going to work in the morning from Leytonstone. Which was quite funny,
so
really.
What did it look like from the tube then?
Well, it looked pretty amazing, really. It was all, you know, painted houses all over the walls and nets all over in the trees and walkways, all kinds of stuff. Like, as far as I remember, I mean, later on it may have got blocked out from the tube because I think maybe they did something that they couldn't see later on, but I'm not sure. But I remember you see something, anyway. I did walk down it a few times in the early times when it was quite friendly and before the police came and had a look in. I went to a couple of parties in the houses, but I'm talking well before the police were there though.
So did you know any other artists then who lived on Claremont Road? Any artists? Or?
I didn't know anybody who lived on that road that I can remember before the Dongas tribe people came. There may have been something, but I can't think of anyone. Except obviously round the corner on the end I did know Ian Bourne who lived there, but he wasn't in the, he was right on the end of it. You literally, and most of the Dongas people were in the straight part, so it had two short sections at each end and then a long section parallel to the tube. So I knew them, and that's where Lucy Bagley lived, so I knew them, but I don't think I knew anyone else. There was an actor, an actress living next to Lucy though called Jo, who I knew as well, but she left well before all that happened. But she was there when we did The Fate though.
Do you remember the
house watch
events down?
Yeah, I do. But that was well before the Dongas people were there, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think they were just probably using a house that was empty, that was like before it was deemed necessary to live in them by people like Dongas. I think they just used one, didn't they? Yeah, I remember going to it.
And what did they do?
They lit up, they projected things on the inside of the windows, which film basically, and it did it in all the rooms of the house at the front. So when you stood at the front, the whole house seemed to have this animation in the windows. But I can't remember what the film was of at all. I have no idea what it was of at all. I can't remember.
And was there quite a crowd down there?
Yeah, I love a crowd. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it was really good.
And would you say it was quite a mixed audience?
For that? No idea. I wouldn't have thought so, but I don't know. I mean, it was an art event, you know, a lot of art events have nothing to do with the community they're in, really, and I don't think that one was particularly, but I don't remember. I mean, they would have invited all their art people, I don't think they invited many locals, but I don't know. My memory is no, but I don't know.
I suppose people might have crept out of their house.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, it wasn't a very obvious place. You know, you wouldn't, not many people would, you'd see it if you were in your house, in that road. But I don't know who was living in that road at the time, but they're probably artists there were non-artists living in that road. They would have come out, yeah. Very local people, literally, but I don't think there were loads of people who, you know, and it wasn't like something Waltham Forest Borough Council advertised or something, you know what I mean, or had it on their educational, I don't think it was, you know, I think they were the arts admin at the time, Housewatch. I mean, they were quite big. They did that kind of thing all over the place. They ended up doing one of those in Hoxton Square, I think, in some sort of contrived thing they had built. I mean, they were like quite big event people, weren't they?
Do you remember the time when the Dongas people actually moved in? Would that have been like 92, 93 or something?
No, it must have been. But I don't think it happened suddenly. But I don't know, though. I don't particularly remember it, no. Sorry.
Because when you went to work, did you tend to walk down Grove Green Road rather than...
I would walk... The thing is, A, because of where I lived, I would usually go to Leytonstone Tube.
Oh, okay.
So I wouldn't go that way. But not to avoid it, it just was... felt like that was the nearest tube to me, whether it is actually, I'm not sure, it's a bit touch and go whether it is, so I wouldn't generally go that way. And then the other thing, yeah, you wouldn't go down Claremont Road unless you were going particularly, because it's not through to somewhere, it's a diversion of a small kind, but it is a diversion. I mean, I would have gone down there occasionally, but I not regularly. And as I say, I mean, I was working, so I wasn't around in the area as much as some other people who probably would have had time to pop around there or cycle through or something, you know.
Did you ever go into that cafe down there?
No, I never used it. I don't even know if I knew there was one there, to be honest with you.
Right. I mean, you mentioned, like, seeing that street from the train.
Yeah.
So, like, did you ever go round Ian Bourne's house or anything? I mean,
yeah, no, I did. Yeah. But he was round the corner on the end. So, you know, you could go there and you wouldn't necessarily walk through... Again, you wouldn't walk through Claremont to get there, because you'd just go down Grove Green and turn left down at the end and go into his house. And he was only like two along.
Mm.
But I didn't go... At that time, I didn't go to his house a lot anyway, I don't think. I would have been going there earlier on. During the inquiry time, or, you know, around then more, probably.
Do you think the Dongas tribe people mixed with, or kept themselves more to themselves?
Well, no, I don't know. I didn't know any of them. But that doesn't mean to say that other people didn't. So I don't know if they did or not. I thought they didn't.
Mm.
I would think they didn't. But whether I'm right, I really don't know. But I didn't know them. But that's as much to do with me not going and shaking their hands, probably, or, you know. But I didn't see them in the pub locally, for instance. But then I wasn't going to the pub so much as I used to, because, you know, artists had gone and we were very busy down in City Racing in South London and, were, you know, all kinds of other reasons, you know, just not out locally so much. That's my memory.
And so, like, that time, like, round about...
But a lot of them don't drink in pubs anyway. They all, you know, they smoke a bit of dope, don't they? And whatever.
So that was, like... around about 93, so it actually changed that much. I mean, there have been that many artists move out of the area that, say, the clientele...
I'm not sure.
Northcote had changed.
Well, I think so. But I'm not... You know, I know that did happen. There was a kind of filtering process that went on a bit. But I can't say for 100% when exactly, but... All I know is if I went in the local boozers, I didn't see them, the two, the Heathcote and Northcote particularly, I didn't see them in there much at all, though I remember. I mean, the nature of their thing is to look after the houses they're protesting and in, and not to go out and socialise somewhere else, because if they do, they're going to, you know, especially later on, they just couldn't. I mean, they would have. But equally, they were a tight-knit band. I think a lot of them had come from Twyford Down or... you know, other protest sites elsewhere, and they were quite a close-knit community, and probably, you know, they felt that way and that's the way they were. But some of them must have got involved with the community to get some support.
So, like, around about that time, there was quite a lot in the local newspaper about them. Did you see all that?
No, I don't know. I never bought a local paper, to be honest with you. But I may have got freebies through my door with some stuff in. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I know they were tremendous at getting publicity. I mean, there'd be stuff in the Nationals later on. I don't know. I don't remember there being lots of complaints or something about them by local people, but maybe there was. I don't remember lots of support for them by locals, but there must have been some. But they just seemed to be there, really, and they became sort of, you know, fixture you knew was there, and they just did what they did, really.
So, like, you know, you talked about, like, the Noem 11 campaign,
yeah,
that you was on with,
yeah,
artists and long-term residents,
yeah, and some people who politically came in from outside as well, who were not like the Douglas Tribe people, like Colin Ward and Colin Beck. They were quite experienced, you know, knew the civil service and how it worked and knew about, you know, the machine of government, really. They were quite big on all that, really.
Was Colin Beck from Archway?
Well, there were people from Archway who came. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'd forgotten about that. There was a woman who came particularly. They, like, sought us out, really. I remember them, you know, and it was like you were kind of, you didn't have any choice, really, and they would come to the meetings, and they were brilliant, some of them. There was one woman whose name I can't remember. It was very, very strong and dominant. But they also had their own infighting and, you know, problems and a lot of history coming. But we didn't have any choice, really. They came when the inquiry was on and infiltrated and were fine and very, very useful. And we learned a lot from them. Very interesting people. But anyway, that was the kind of group that I was with, yeah. What was your original question? It was about you were differentiating possibly between our protests and what we did. And then the Dongus thing.
Yeah, because I'm wondering.
There is a definite divide.
There is
a divide. I would suggest, absolutely. Only because I decided after the public, I mean, very conservatively decided to stop doing anything really after the public inquiry was lost. A, because it ran out of energy and it took up so much time. B, you know, we'd done what we could and we delayed it as long as we thought we could and we didn't want to, I just didn't want to do any more really. I mean, had it been my own house that I owned and the government had come along and said, we're going to trash your area and the value of my house was dropping in stuff, or I'd, you know, it was where I'd planned to live and they'd wrecked the area, then I would have fought to the bitter end, because I would have felt very differently. But because I came in knowing the house was owned by them and because I knew it was temporary when I was signing the contract with ATME, there wasn't the same, you know, real gut defensive mechanism there, you know. You just did what you
did quite a lot, really.
Well, we did a hell of a lot, but it wasn't the same as if I'd been my own. Or, you know what I mean? Or,
so, did you do like door to door work and stuff as well?
Some, yeah, a bit. Mostly just sticking leaflets through doors. Though. I mean, I didn't go around knocking on people's houses and saying, "Will you come and do this?" I mean, it wasn't like canvassing or nothing. I don't think I did any of that.
And did you go on to the Brussels?
Yeah, I did. I did, actually, yeah. I went to with Lucy Bagley and someone else maybe, but possibly just she and I went. We went to the European, you know, what's it called? To the European Parliament in Brussels. Stayed with a friend she had in a lovely artist's art deco house in Brussels, and then went and I think we were delivering a petition or something. I don't think we saw an MP, an EP, or whatever they were called in those days, but we did do something. I think I might have gone twice, actually.
Do you remember a guy called Rich Thompson in Colville Road, who had an office in his house, local resident? Because he went to Brussels as well, and I'm just wondering if he went the same time as you.
I think probably, possibly not. Okay. The thing is, we went to see this friend of Lucy's a couple of times, I think. So it kind of, and that one was social and one was to do with the Parliament. And I don't remember going with a load of other people, though. I don't think I did. I think other people did go. See, I think a few delegations, as it were, went from the protesting, because we had a lot of support from a particular commission from the. We tried to get the commissioner. The commissioner was quite on our side, it seemed, and you know, we got more support from them in a way against the government here than we did from anybody. You know, there was an MP in Waltham, Stone, Waltham Forest, what it's called, who was still there, I think, and he wasn't bad, but he wasn't really. He was a bit on the fence, I thought. We all thought, really.
Was that Hugh?
No. Cohen. Yeah, Harry Cohen was the one I'm referring to. But Hugh Morgan Thomas turned up at the inquiry in the pub out suddenly out of the blue, just there. And I was a bit suspicious of him at first. But eventually he did. I think he became a councillor or something. And he sort of infiltrated the community. But again, it was a bit like, in the end, you thought, well, what are you doing all this for? You know, you're kind of... And I thought he was just wanting to be an MP, and it was a good cause for him to get his... But I never really worked him out completely, and in the end, he disappeared somewhere. But he did a lot of stuff, though. I mean, I quite liked him. I think we used to go around his house and have meetings and stuff. Forgotten about him, yeah. Hugh Morgan Thomas.
So where did you say he lived?
Hugh Morgan Thomas?
Yeah, did he live in...
Well, I think he lived up near Wanstead Roundabout somewhere.
Oh.
Somewhere, not on the road of the route of the road. That's my memory, because I think, I'm sure he could cycle there or walk there. It wasn't far away. That's my memory of it.
What I wanted to ask you...
Reg, I don't remember that guy Reg, actually. Not by face. Reg. No. Go on.
The people from Archway.
Yeah.
Were any of them Acme artists?
No. Right. Not that I know of. No, my memory of them was they were completely, you know, they were kind of a new history, which I learned about because they turned up from wherever they lived. I never went to their houses, but I always assumed they were still in Archway, but I don't know if they were. They probably can't have been, actually. But... No, some of them were. Anyway, because that's a famous another road, a row of houses on the edge of Hampstead, isn't it? Where the North Circular, is it the North Circular? No, it's from the road from Archway goes up towards the North Circular, and they stopped that getting widened by having, there's some lovely houses up there. And so they had a lot of winning history. And I think they came to be helpful, really. And they were, to a degree. I mean, you know, they didn't climb trees and join the Dongas tribe, to my knowledge. They were quite like us in the sense they were playing the conventional, you know, beat the system at the system's own game thing, really.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you can do, really, anyway.
I'd agree with that.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, the inquiry, basically everybody thought, really, the inquiry was a stitch-up, and the guy who was the commissioner of it, whatever his name was, whatever title I gave him, was totally biased and, you know... It was a constant, he probably thought he wasn't, but it was quite clear. Whenever he wrote reports and things, he was always not really saying any more about our side of things than he had to say. And he was quite, and in the end, it was rubber, he just rubber stamped it. It didn't really matter what happened in the inquiry, the result was going to be the same. That's what we thought. So we just did loads and loads of delay tactics.
And was there Richard
Layton? Yeah, no, Richard Layton, was he the post office? Worked for British Telecom, was that, I mean, guy with big whiskers, sideburns, I mean, whatever you call them, who lived in Colville at the end, didn't he, with his mother?
Yeah.
I hadn't forgotten him, but I'd forgotten his name.
I didn't know he worked at the post.
Yeah, no, GP, he was like BT. Okay. He was a telecommunications chap. And I don't know, yeah, I remember him, he was great.
So was his place of work in the area, or...?
I don't know. I think so. I'm not sure. So,
I was wondering if that was anything to do with the post office.
No, I don't think he had a connection with the post office. He wasn't the post office, but he was a BT, you know, telecommunications thing, which I think was separate from the post office then. I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah, no, he lived with his mum, and they, you know, they owned their house, as far as I know, and they were genuine long-term community people. They were a really good example of it, really, because he was the son of his mother who lived there all her life, I think, and he was sort of living there with her and he wanted to stay. And in the end, I think he blamed his mother's dying on the stress of the whole thing.
Well,
I'm not quite sure when she died, actually, but...
When they got evicted,
she was alive, wasn't she?
Yeah, and she collapsed, yeah. And she was taken to hospital.
That's right.
and I don't really know.
Do you know the result, or what happened after that? Because no. I don't think I know.
No.
No, I thought she died, but I might be wrong. He was very, very keen and very involved, in, you know, which is I thought was rather unusual in a way, because I found most people who were living in the community, very few of them who were not artists or didn't, you know, didn't seem to be able to get involved in the protest, really. You know, it was almost as if, thinking about it, my feeling was that the artists were, if they hadn't been there, there really wouldn't have been much resistance during the inquiry at all.
Why?
That's my feeling about it.
I know there was a couple of offices in Colville Road.
Right.
One was this guy...
The Reg, yes. I can't remember
which
it very well.
Opposite me. I'm not sure...
There was a guy called Henry as well. Do you remember him? Very tall, thin guy with bald, with a beard. He turned up quite out of nowhere.
And what road did he live in?
I don't know. But he had a kind of office in his house and he did printing. I think he might have lived in Claremont. I think he was one of the people who lived in Claremont who I did know. And he was a kind of what you could describe as a hippie, but he was a bald one. So I think he could have been actually the contact with getting the Dongas in, thinking about it. But I'm making this up a bit, I don't know. But he was definitely on our committee and would have been involved in the road anti-road thing, and he wasn't an artist, to my knowledge.
Because I heard a rumour that Sheila Thompson or some people from the Residents Association actually telephoned the Dongas people.
Well, that's quite possible.
To get their support.
Yeah, and there was a Residents Association. There was one, wasn't there? There was a kind of there was a Residents Association, but was it quite a small area? It was from Colville Road resident. I mean, was it formed, as far as I remember, that was like a particular local thing that was formed, but it was tiny, if I remember rightly, and there wasn't many people in it. I mean, it wasn't like a Waltham Forest residence, you know, all the ward, it wasn't like, you know, 1,000 people, I mean, it was probably...
Well, I think it was because Richard Layton's dad was a campaigner.
Was he really?
Years ago.
So I see, okay.
It kind of got...
So Richard knew about that, okay, I didn't know about that.
It went back quite a long
time. That's interesting, I didn't know that. Have you spoken to him? Can you find him?
He did come to the film screening, and I'm sure the second part of the project we can develop the interview.
Yeah, I know he's not an artist, so at the moment it doesn't fit, but if you can find him, that'd be interesting. I haven't seen him for years.
But
I wonder how he knew about it. Somebody must know him still, who I don't.
So that's interesting. You remember a guy called Henry. I'm wondering if that Henry is the guy who set up the cafe.
You know, that's possible. I think actually that's probably right, actually. I think, yeah, it's very likely that it was. I think that he would have been the first person to probably do something in Claremont that was sort of, you know, to get people in that street or, you know, I think so.
Was he an actor?
I don't think so. He didn't, I don't know what he did. I don't know if he was working particularly on anything. I really don't know what Henry did.
Joe Rodriguez said that the guy who set up the cafe was an actor and there was a house of actors.
I don't think that's... But I don't know. I don't know. I don't think Henry did on his own, no. I think that's quite right. I think he might have lived with some other people, so he could have been.
So what age was he?
Well, he was older than me, I know that. Then I would have thought he was, I don't know, I have to work out how old I am now and how old I was then. When are we talking about? Mid-90s, 10 years ago. I'd have said he was mid-40s, but I really don't know. He could have been slightly younger or older. Indeterminate age.
So what was it like sort of towards the end when you were sort of going back to your house? And was there like a lot of boarded up places.
Yeah, quite a few. And obviously in the end, I mean, there was, when I was living in the flat, when I moved out of mine, I mean, there was like tons of demolition and...
So...
I lived through the whole of the time when the road was being built and all the houses were knocked down and everything. But it's all a bit of a blur, really, because it was just, you know, going on and you just didn't spend too much time hanging around because it wasn't that pleasant, really.
It must have been pretty noisy.
Yeah, I think it was, and I think it was quite dusty, if I remember rightly. Dust is a word that keeps coming into my mind. I think it was.
Did you ever have any rats and stuff?
Nah. No, I never had any problem that way. Not I remember at all. I'm sure some people did, but I didn't. Don't remember that.
And I suppose there were a few more things I wanted to ask you actually about the public inquiry.
Try it.
It's sort of like it's slipping my mind, slipping away from me. No, I can't remember.
Was it to do with how it was done or what we... We used to ask lots of questions from the floor.
Okay. Yeah, explain, because
I can't quite remember. I can't remember in detail, but we would be basically you would there would be transcripts would be provided very fast, and then we'd get them. If I remember, we used to have to read them, and out of the, I mean, transcripts of what was said. But then there were all kinds of things that, but it, basically, what the way it went was, the more you raised, probably based on something in the transcript, either if something was wrong, you'd have to raise that, or if you had, there were lots of, you know, people would take it away and scramble about for legal things that were wrong, or for loopholes, or, you know, and that's when people like Colin Bex and Colin Ward and all these people would be quite involved, I think, because they'd come up with legal things, and then they would be raised, if I remember rightly, from the audience, and they'd have to be dealt with. So the, and the more you could come up with, the more it went on, you know. So it was a delaying thing, you know.
So these transcripts, would that be like when you had one public inquiry, it would be transcribed?
The day's speaking would be typed up
and
given out free, and they had to do as many copies as were needed.
At the end of the day.
Well, I think it was done literally as you went. I mean, they had to work. I mean, they produced tons of paperwork. I mean, the transcription part, if you had all the transcriptions, there'd be a huge pile of paper. I think it probably wasn't. It was probably the next day or something. I mean, but it was amazingly quick. And they'd have to print, you know, and there'd be like, you know, half an inch thick, and everyone would have one if they wanted one, and they'd have to give it out. But then we'd have to read it all. But I think the reason for reading it was in order that you could work out what to contest next. It was a kind of, and there would be people up on the table, you know, there were people who were for and against, and people putting points of, you know, which had to be dealt with by the people from the government, basically.
So was you at any of those public inquiries where local people were putting proposals in for alternative routes? Or maybe that was a bit earlier?
Yeah, I don't think so. That does ring a bell. There were some inquiries that happened. Like, it wasn't the first inquiry, was it? The last inquiry that we all went to wasn't the first one. I think there had been others, hadn't there, before I was even there.
So,
but I don't know much about those.
You were attending. Were they about exchange of land?
Yeah, there's a lot of that about. A lot about. That's a good example of what, you know, what you'd be doing would be saying, well, you've offered exchange land here. You know, basically, we'd look at the plans which were provided by the inquiry, and you'd say, well, that is not an equivalent swap because it's contaminated land, and we'd have to prove it was. So then that would be all the work that would be done behind the scenes, was getting the proof, and then then that would be presented, and then they'd have to refute it or not. You know, and that would go on a lot. Or, you know, you'd say, well, it's just a long, thin strip alongside the road. It's not the equivalent of B. You know, A is not being represented fairly by B. Like, there is a long strip of parkland alongside the road, but on Grosgreen Road now, where... But it's useless. I mean, it's just too narrow and nobody even goes in it. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anyone in it, ever. At one point, you couldn't get in because it was locked anyway. I mean, that was exchange land and it was just a ruse. So there's all that kind of thing. Yeah.
So did any of the local residents have their own solicitors? Because, like, to investigate, say...
I think some... That does ring a bell. I think some people did pay out money to try and assist. I mean, I think Richard Layton paid out money. I think he put money in. I think there were people who were putting money in for lawyers. That rings a bell. Lawyers and solicitors, and you know, there were equally other people who were putting in time for free. But there was one person who did a lot of work, who was an expert. Who, God, I can't remember his name. Who we were, I think, was probably being paid, and he would do work, and we'd have to decide whether to. And I think that's what the fundraisers were for.
That's what I was thinking myself.
I think the fundraising was really for paying for legal assistance, i.e., to pay people who could really deal with the legal complications of the inquiry, which, frankly, were above our heads and would be above anybody's heads. And that's how they win the inquiries, basically, is because they just throw lots of stuff at you and you can't deal with it because you don't know what it is. And if you're not rich, you can't. And that's actually why being a group obviously would help, because we'd raise money as a group to do it. But, you know, how many thousands of pounds we raised? I can't imagine we raised that much. So I can't think we could have done, but we would have raised more than I imagined, but it couldn't have been that much.
Basically, a public inquiry is like a tribunal. I mean, it probably doesn't have the same powers, but I'm just thinking that's what it...
You mean like a tribunal, say, like if you were going to be given the sack and the union was protecting you from your employer, and you'd go to a thing and then the union would be representing you. Yeah, but in that case, you've got the union representing you, because and they've got their legal team, and they'll pay for all the expenses, the union, won't they?
It's like a mini court, but some
people, yeah, very much so, yes,
represent themselves.
You can and some people did represent themselves. Yeah, some people represented themselves, some people would have someone representing them if they could afford it.
So
and there were individual houses. I think if you... Basically, if you were registered as an owner in the area of a particular property that was going to be affected, you demanded a certain right to be dealt with as an individual case. And each individual case went through the same process. But so therefore, the more individual cases were raised, the more time had to be spent, because they couldn't say, like, oh, we'll deal with you all. You know, it's not because, you know, it's the road being built versus the community. But except it's not the community; it's individuals and individual houses. So they have to deal with them all individually, because they can't deal with the community, because there's no, you know, we're not a company. And you know what I mean? Legally, they have. So that was one way of delaying it. Probably was to actually come up with lots of different residents who were willing to be not used, but like assisted in protesting. In fact, I think some people were persuaded to be to have their, or befriended, so they could be actually used as examples of people who would go to the inquiry and say, you know, an old lady might be the person you're actually talking about, but she wouldn't be doing it. Maybe that's who Edie Edworthy was. You know,
you see,
that's my memory is where it gets blurred. Yeah, but I think that's how it was done.
That's why you'd have the residents' association. So.
Yeah.
Particular streets would put their cases.
Yeah.
And then I suppose they'd deal with individual cases, because a case that comes to mind,
yeah,
is Mrs. Swift in Colville Road, who had agoraphobia and was born in that house.
Right.
And everyone was concerned about what would happen to her.
Yeah.
Because her house was earmarked for eviction.
Yeah, yeah.
They knocked her house down. And now that's where those noddy houses are, where you got in Colville Road.
I know, it's very small, very, very small houses.
Knocked down, and they need not have been knocked down
at all.
There's cases, I suppose, like that probably people like Richard Latham was bringing forward, and that guy Reg Johnson. No, were.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly remember there being people who lived in houses who were supported by the protesting group, you know, in order that they would be, hopefully, you know, because you see, in a way, all that had to happen really was that one person had to win their case, and they couldn't build a road, because if there's one house there left and they can't get them out because of some, for some legal reason, they can't build it. So you that, that you know, you, so you, and they're all fought separately, and then there were other things, you like the exchange land, as you mentioned. That's my memory of it. I'm sure there's far more to it than this, and it was very complicated. And there were lots of different angles on it, and there probably were some disagreements about what was the best way of doing it. I mean, you know, it was a bit very quick learning, fast learning curve, really, for some people. Well, obviously, some people, like the people from Archway, knew more about it from their experience than others. But it wasn't only them who came in from the outside, I don't think.
Because I suppose when you think down at Wanstead, where they had...
the old oak tree on the green.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of like the headquarters down there.
Of what?
Dealt with, you know, the anti-row campaigners were dealing with their legal cases from that office down at Wanstead.
Can't remember that.
I'm just wondering how it all linked up.
So I can't remember that.
Right.
That doesn't mean to say it wasn't there, but I don't remember regularly going to anything in Wanstead at all.
Did you?
There was something there, though, I'm sure. I just can't remember it.
So the 300-year...
oak tree? No.
It wasn't an oak... sweet chestnut tree.
Was it? Right. I didn't have a lot to do with that.
But you probably saw it, remember seeing it on
In
the newspapers and stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I knew the tree anyway, but I don't think I went... I may have gone to protest once, but I don't think I did much to do with that. I remember that's being a later part of the campaign, a bit.
I think 93, 94.
Yeah, I mean, I did go up there a bit. There was another tree as well by the Leytonstone tube station that went as well. Now, that's the oak tree, I think. I think there was a very big oak tree right by the... probably where the now ghastly brick sculpture of buses is, in the middle of the bus turnaround area. I think that's where the tree was.
Going back to that public inquiry, I mean, did it get people, you know, could speak and put their case across? Presumably it was quite systematic.
I think so. I can't remember there was any much disruption in it. I think there must...
That's what I was wondering.
I think there must have been some individuals who did, and I think I think we did used to shout things out. But I can't remember how disruptive it got, but it never got violent or anything like that. I mean, I never got taken out or anything. I don't think it did, actually.
So in a way, it's not like a court, because you
can... No, there's no police. I don't think there's any police in it, obviously. It's nothing like, you know...
It's not like contempt of court.
No, I don't think so. No. Well, no, it's not like that. As far as I remember, it wasn't like that. There was an air of... that, but not the same. No. I mean, he's not a judge, the guy, is he? I mean, he's a commissioner or something, or a, I can't know what they called him now.
That's right. What I was going to say was, you know, sort of like the whole of that time. First of all, I suppose, from the point of view of kind of the live workspaces for artists and the kind of things that were going on, I mean, do you think that could ever happen again? would you think it was something that...
I mean, it wouldn't ever happen exactly the same again, obviously, but I think there are quite a lot of artists who are quite, for instance, ecologically minded, and, you know, students of art school and whatever, who might do that. But the thing is, I think probably it's been learnt by the government that allowing somebody like Acme to have houses like that is, I should think they probably don't do it anymore. I mean, you know, they wouldn't, if they do still buy houses to blight areas and to, you know, where they want to put roads, I know they still do that, but I don't think they'd probably rent them out to artists, you know, associations in order to, so I doubt it would happen in that sense. But I do think the Dongus kind of thing is not going to go away. I'm sure that's, you know, and I think, for instance, the one opening at Heathrow now, for the stop the runway being built, I think that's quite likely to be where you would find similar Dongus people, and you might find some, and there might be more art students who would be more up for that than they were in our day. Mm. You know, seeing it more as a kind of legitimate and sort of side of their practice, or more, you know, they'd have a more kind of holistic attitude towards their life and their art, whereas I think we were kind of different and trained to be rather more traditional and, you know, square, you know, rectilinear stretches and canvases and galleries, and, you know, not to use your visual training in order to be political or to, you know, to be more involved with society in an obvious direct way.
So do you think, like, protest art is quite fashionable now?
I don't know about fashionable. I don't know if it's fair to say fashionable, but to a degree, I would think that. But in actual fact, I don't see much of it in reality, so I don't know really whether that's true. I don't know if it is. I don't know. You know, I don't teach in art schools much anymore, but when I do go, I don't really see much obvious thinking in that way.
I'm just thinking but then, about, you know, Venice, the section they had, was it called a Democracy, or there was like a show at Goldsmiths called Democracy, wasn't there, a while ago, sort of, was it late 90s or early 2000?
Uh-huh.
And then you had some repeated things, like in Venice, I think it was.
Right.
2003, they had a whole section, I don't know if it was called Utopia, where you had a lot of sort of banner work, and Yoko Ono was in there, and
right.
Niels Norman, and sort of artists like that.
I mean, obviously artists have protested or used their art to make statements about things for years, and get involved with some things sometimes, don't they? And literally, you know, campaigning with. But I'm not quite sure what we're saying, really. You said, do I think it could happen again?
Yeah.
I suspect not in the same way at all, no. Why are you mentioning Venice? I'm quite sure what Venice is. I mean, I don't know a lot about Venice. I've never been there. I know the artist names you mentioned, but I don't know the shows, actually. I've heard, I mean, there was Protest and Survive, which Paul Noble put on in the Whitechapel. Wasn't that what
exactly.
It was called?
Yeah, that was before the...
Yeah.
Venice.
I mean, it's a great title, but it's not necessarily... I mean, if you're saying could it happen again, I presume you mean would artists do something in the community like that again, like we did? Is that what you meant?
Could be. I mean, I'm sort of thinking at probably lots of different angles, but I'm kind of keeping it open to see how you answer the question.
I'm not quite sure.
But do you think, like, I'm just thinking in a way, like the kind of sheer scale of artists that were living in that area. Because
I mean, the concentration in one small area was very high.
Yeah, because I reckon, like, when Acme got afforded all those houses, that must have been quite amazing.
For them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Like, yes. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. It's probably the most they've ever had, I've thought, yeah. In one area. Yeah. And I don't think that's happening now. I mean, they don't do that. They don't get offered houses anymore. But I don't know if that's because they don't want them and they've moved on into building stuff and, you know, more permanent studios. I think they probably thought, you know, temporary stuff doesn't work in the end. It's just, you know, they'd rather have permanent stuff for artists buy to let or whatever.
Do you think it's also to do with the property market?
Well, it's very likely, yeah. I mean, you know, houses are worth a mint now, so there aren't so many of them lying doing nothing. But then they still build roads and they still have to, you know, you go out on the A40 leaving West London and there's loads of houses up there that are really on the edge of, and I'm sure, and they, I don't know who owns them, but they're blighted without question, and I think it's the Department of Transport done it in some way or other, and because they want to widen the road, but it's been like that for 20 years.
Because around that time there were other short life houses in...
Yeah. London and Quadrant Housing, yeah. Trust, I had one of those, which I think I mentioned last time we spoke, for £1 with Mark Wallinger.
£1?
Yeah, we paid £1 rent. Yeah, I said you'd say that last time, I think.
But whereabouts was that?
That was in Brixton, or just off Herne Hill, near Herne Hill. But it didn't have a toilet or it had a toilet, an outside toilet and no kitchen, no bathroom. And it had a sink, no bathroom. It was pretty run down, but it was only for a studio. We weren't meant to live in it. They wouldn't rent it to us as a house. They were renting it only as a studio, not for living in. Not like Atme. And he had one before, Mark had one before, which he got off them, which was, again, not for living in. It was just for... I think basically they just thought, we're houses that are so buggered, we can't afford, or it's not worth renovating them enough to live in, we'll just let people have them for a studio. But they were cheap, much cheaper.
So is that linked to an art college there?
No. I mean, yeah, we were at Goldsmiths at the time, but it wasn't, London and Quadrant was nothing to do with art school, no. You just applied to get them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite unusual, because I'm just thinking how they decided on artists.
I don't know, actually. I don't know how London and Quadrant found, or what ones have found them, but I think it was that artists got houses with them, or flats, or whatever, because London Quadrant would do that, and they probably just had a, you know, it probably came out of students, and somebody there obviously liked artists, I don't know why that was, but then because they were with them, they had a connection with them, so then they probably got offered a, because I think Mark lived at a London Quadrant house in County Grove, when he had the other house, as a studio, I think. So there was a kind of, you know, you live in one, but you have another one through knowing them.
Because around that time, there were a lot of housing associations, and suddenly quite a few went bust.
But my memory of associations, but it may be wrong, is that they were very much into renting. And then they seemed to suddenly change and be into building. Like, now, house associations now seem to do what councils used to do. So councils stopped building and renting. House associations took over a lot of their properties and started building. But before that, house associations seemed to me to be far better in that they were not... They were renting cheaper houses than council houses and seemed to have access to a lot of property that was, you know, not... It was old, quite a lot of it. But I don't know why they did or how they got it. But I think they came out of the 60s and some more, much more, you know, for the people kind of that approach. Whereas now I think they seem to be like, you know, they're just property developers really, and you end up. But I'm not that expert on it really. But so I'm talking about in the 80s, really, London and Quadrant. I had houses with them. In two places, Chumley Gardens and near Elephant Castle off one Walworth Road, and then another one down at Elephant Castle. And then I moved to that one that Mark had as a studio in Herne Hill. But I knew other people, lots of people who had them though, but they were all artists.
So basically, I suppose one of the things that you said in answer to that question was that you didn't think that a man, if there were blighted houses again, that they'd be offered...
Yeah, that's my feeling. I can't imagine them doing it, really, because I just think they would have learnt their lesson from that, perhaps. But I don't know. Maybe outside London it's happening. I don't know. But I don't know, I think that if there were people living in the community like that who were all artists in that same situation, they would do something, probably. So I don't think it's like, you know, we would better people differently. I just think it's, the situation won't occur, is what I suspect.
So probably, like, it could happen, but perhaps not on such a large scale.
Yeah, probably. Or if there is, but I think if artists to be involved in anti-road protesting, they will do it more like the Dongas tribe do it. You know, it'll be a way of life thing rather than a we live here thing, so we're going to do something about it thing, which is quite different. You know, I didn't go somewhere else and join a road campaign somewhere else after that one was lost, you know, whereas the people on the Dongas, people who came in later, probably went to another campaign after that.
So do you think, I think you mentioned last time about artwork, or maybe I've misinterpreted this, that the protesters did. What did you think about that?
Well, at the time, I didn't. It's, you know, it wasn't what I. It wasn't. I didn't know how to judge it as art. For me, it wasn't. It was just. It was good visual. You know, something to get lots of attention and. To sort of, you know, make the place into theirs and decorate it. And but I'm only talking about Claremont Road and what I remember it looked like, which was basically lots of paint all over the outside and sort of weird sculptures made out of found materials and painted, and, you know, I can't remember what they were, a lot of them, but it was just a kind of mass of, so as you went by on the tube, you saw it all, you know, kind of attention-grabbing kind of stuff, usually with slogans written in it. Which I didn't really think of as art at the time, but in a way it is art because it's visual and it's creative and it has a purpose, which is.
Did you see any of the gay board and sort of pieces?
Do you mean the end of the house is when they wrote a song?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I don't remember them very well. But when you showed me, there was a couple in the leaflet there we saw earlier, but I don't actually remember those particular ones. But, you know, it's how you define art, isn't it, really? If you think art is should be political and have a purpose that's direct, then it is art. And if you don't, then it isn't. But it certainly was an expression of something. So it could be. But I didn't feel like going and making it myself at the time, or, you know, giving them all a show, or... Or more the point, giving a show to people who documented it or something like that. You know what I mean? I didn't, you know, in a way, I think to myself, well, why didn't we do something at City Racing about, you know, we could have used City Racing as a campaign, you know, you could have done an exhibition about it somehow or other. But it just did not seem of interest to do such a thing, or it seemed like a completely different world. You know what I mean? I just didn't connect the two up, really. I'm not saying it was good, but I didn't. Whereas we could have actually probably done quite a lot if we'd wanted to. I mean, we could have done it ourselves, for starters. But we weren't really into documentary photography, for instance. We didn't ever show any of that.
So I suppose now, in the present climate, that would probably be seen as kind of work, socially engaged.
What would, the photographs of such of stuff, or what their Dongas actually did? Or both.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, possibly, yeah, in some places it would. I mean, I think the thing is there's such an enormous variety of what is thought of as interesting by different types of galleries which will show different types of work that, yes, it would be in some galleries, but not in others. Or it would be, you know, it has to be done in a very particular way to be accepted in some and not in others. Or, you know, there are some galleries who'd only show that kind of stuff or only do shows that are like that. I mean, there's spaces near Hoxton where I think it's the Foundry, where I wouldn't be at all surprised if you go in there and see identical sculptures to the kind that were done in the street outside Claremont Road now. But I've seen them on the street recently. I mean, but it has a completely different meaning to me because it's aesthetic as opposed to being in a context. You know, the context of the Foundry Gallery doesn't seem to me to be, you know, it's nothing like the same reason why the other stuff is made. Mm-hmm. It's just an aesthetic similarity, not a meaningful similarity, if that makes sense.